want you. And your nigga can't do nothing for you.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Denise!
How are you?
I am good. I am good. I have finally seen moonlight, so...
So life is great.
Yes.
You finally saw it! Okay, we can talk about that in the second segment. We will definitely talk about that in the second segment, but let's start with things breaking the internet, at least the black interwebs, this week. Stranded Bae versus Hurt Bae. Where do I begin? So... I'm sure everybody has heard or read about it. There were two hashtags that were just so fierce this week. There was Hurt Bae on the one end that came out of a recording that actually took place over an hour and a half, but it was condensed down to about 6 minutes and 45 seconds of a couple talking about their woes, an ex-couple talking about fuckboy cheating. And on the other end, there was Stranded Bae, which was a Twitter story. I'm not sure if they were trying to go for the type of Twitter fame that we've seen other people who've told stories receive. They didn't quite get that. But there was a woman who told her version of a story of how she went to visit a dude who said he was completely in love with her. And then when she missed her flight, he let her remain stranded before he then chimed in and said, "That's not the story. That is not the story at all. Let me tell you what really went down." And then other people chimed in and were like, nah, we know this chick. She absolutely is unreliable. And she probably went to old dude's place hoping to live there because she had got evicted from her own spot.
Oh, wow.
Let's start with Hurt Bae, since people seem to have more sympathy for her. Have you watched the video?
I have watched the video for Hurt Bae.
So I know you're ready to go in. Explain to us what we're seeing.
Well, we're seeing someone who, it seems like this was her first love.
Yeah.
She seemed really naive, really open. And he was just cheating in the most blatant of ways. Like, he goes to his room because they're in college, and there's a woman in there, and he has her leave, you know, and she's still with him after that, you know, this kind of thing, right? Like, so... It's clear to me that she just was super naive. And one thing that I really didn't like in the aftermath is, like, I saw an article about it from Very Smart Brothers, and they were like, well, you know, what chick reacts this way? Like, there's like what they think should be a black response to this. And I'm like, have y'all seen the stats for black women?
Right. Let's talk about that. I mean, there were some really funny parodies of this on Instagram. And one was like how a Caribbean woman would react.
Right. And then eventually abusing. And that's the stereotype, right?
Right. That's the stereotype, but it's not the full reality.
It is not the reality at all. It is not the reality at all. I rarely see that happening.
Right. That's usually how women, black women get portrayed, right? Violent reactions, aggressive, beating up emasculating the man and so forth.
Mm-hmm. But in reality, I think that Hurt Bae has a more typical reaction.
Absolutely.
Which is you internalize it, you cry a lot, you get depressed,
right?
You think it's about you, and eventually you get over it.
Though Hurt Bae says that she, you know, she has completely gotten over it now and was surprised that it went viral in the way that it did. So
it went viral because it was such a typical story.
Right.
Like, dude was basically like the Voldemort of love.
He had
no feelings.
He had no feelings. And it's, again, I do want to say that it was an hour and a half, the conversation, and it's been condensed to 6 minutes and 45 seconds. So we don't know how much the editing has shifted things. But the stuff coming out of his mouth is the stuff coming out of his mouth, right? Like, I didn't keep count with your ass. How many times did you cheat? Like, that's your response? Or when she's looking at him, hoping for an apology, it takes him a very long time to get there. And he says, well, I mean, I don't think you really could have done anything differently. You were a good girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
That is so patronizing and condescending and just also
male
focused.
Yeah, on the other side of his mouth, he's like, well, why didn't you leave?
Right. He was like, I don't really understand why you didn't leave after that. I mean, if you're going through my phone and you have so little trust, Really? And would you, and if she would have left, what would you have done? You would have tried to get her back because you weren't ready for her to leave.
Maybe, but I think this is how a lot of people end relationships is they cheat.
That's true. That is true.
Is they just mess up so hard that their partner has no other option, logical option, than to just be like, it's over. And they might catch feelings, but they just don't want to be the one to say it's over.
And what's interesting is if you go to YouTube to watch it. So just to be clear, this is from Condé Nast Entertainment. The channel is called The Scene and the show is called Broken. And this is just the first of what will be, I guess, several conversations that they recorded over some time. And these people, Courtney, Jorge, and Leonard Long III, they were, you know, vetted quite extremely before coming on to record this. But what's interesting is if you go to the YouTube channel, and on the right-hand side, you know, YouTube will suggest other things you might want to watch. There are so many shows about cheating. Why is this a thing? Why are people so thirsty to read or watch about other people's pain in cheating? Why?
Because for a lot of people, it's the most traumatic experience they'll ever go through. For a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
And they have a need to process it and understand it and dissect it. And now you can do that kind of in this hall of mirrors that we call the internet. So people are going to do it.
Okay. I see. Well, that's okay. On the other end, we have, like I said, Stranded Bay. And my thing with this story is I was in conversation with quite a few people this week about whose side do they believe. So again, Stranded Bay takes to Twitter to tell this story of a man who has her face printed on a t-shirt, flies her out to him, because he lives in D.C., flies her out for Valentine's Day, pays for the flight and the whole package, and they spend a nice weekend together or a night. I don't remember if it was one night or two nights. They have a nice time. Mm-hmm. She gets to the airport for whatever reason, inexplicably misses her flight, calls old dude, is like, I missed my flight. He's not answering. She's blowing him up, sending him texts. He's not responding. She's, texting his friend. And they're like, let me try and get in touch. And basically what happens is on his Snapchat, she sees that, you know, at some point she's been at the airport for like 7 hours. On Snapchat, it's the evening now. And she sees that he's in the club, getting it in with the same friends that claim they were trying to find him for her. She, for whatever reason, takes a taxi back to his house. Like,
why?
Yes. Not this nigga not gonna do me like that, basically, right? The door remains locked. Nobody lets her in. You know, it's an odd story. Mm-hmm. And basically, he comes in and he's like, nah, I'm not gonna let my name be, you know, messed up like that. This is how it really happened. She found out that she was getting evicted while she was visiting.
Oh, snap.
And she, even if she did miss that first flight, which she had no reason to miss, why didn't she get on the several flights after that she could have taken to get back home, right? So there you have it. Those are the two sides. And then some other people chimed in who said, you know, they had similar situations with her. And I'm less likely to or less inclined to believe those simply because I think people
bandwagon things.
Right. They want to get in on the gag. They want their little 2 seconds of fame. And she even she responded quite simply. She said, I don't know these people and I don't know why they're trying to bring my name into it. So, but why did you go on Twitter to begin with to drag this dude? If your story might have some
holes. Just behave like an adult, right? If someone gives me a package weekend, and it's time for me to roll.
Roll
and
out.
I miss my flight.
That's
okay. And I hit my business.
Right.
Because that's what grown people do. Like,
no matter about the rest, right?
Like, yeah, don't worry about the rest. Like, I mean, like, if this person, you know, comes to the rescue and is on some white knight situation, like, okay, that's great. But otherwise, I got to handle my business. And if I can't afford that second flight because it's non-refundable and it's easy jet, find out where the Greyhound at.
Right.
And make a move.
Right.
But, you know, generally, when you're an adult, getting from A to B to C is your responsibility.
Exactly. I mean, we have, like you said, we have a lot of options. You don't want to go Greyhound, you can do Megabus. I mean, come on. It was D.C. Like, there's a lot of options leaving
D.C. Yo, there's ride sharing. There's an app now for that. Right. Like,
a whole lot of options to leave D.C. So, but I think it was interesting how differently she was treated versus her. Stranded Bay kind of, she didn't really get dragged. But nobody was ready to believe her story at all. Whereas Hurt Bay, of course, we had a visible image of this person really being hurt, garnered a lot of sympathy, and everybody, and old dude got dragged. Leonard, he got dragged.
Yeah, but that was like a bona fide relationship. They had been friends. He really like was dirty with her. And the situation with Stranded Bay is like, you have known this dude in real life for a weekend.
Well, he did have her face printed on the t-shirt, though.
That's all right. That's all well and good. But like, let's be real. You have known him in real life for about 2 days.
Right.
And now he's responsible for all of your transportation needs over state lines. Like, get over yourself. Like, stop it. Like, what are you doing right now?
You know, this story also showed me just how paranoid I am. I don't know that I could be flown out to somebody and live in a place for a minute. I would be real scared. I would have like the weapon with me at all times because you just never know. You just never know what's about to happen. She also did show a picture of a mouse scurrying across his floor in his apartment. So that would have been my cue to roll out either way. I would have been like, how about I'm going to the hotel?
No.
You have mice in your apartment?
Well, you know, people are thirsty. People are thirsty for love. And here's the thing that people don't understand. A lot of dudes will do whatever is necessary to smash. Just whatever is necessary. So if that's like flying you out, look, plane tickets be like cheap.
That's true.
You know, sometimes you can spend more on a date than a plane ticket. I got that. So in that sense, it's not really a big sacrifice to like fly you out, you know, especially since they're going to get what they think they're going to get. And but that's all it is for some people. They're like, and that's what I want. And that's what I'm going to get. And then I'm done. And it's an ideal situation for some people because they're like, well, then they're out, right? Like you go back to Kentucky or whatever. And I can just do me.
Right.
I don't even have to have somebody like I'm running into at the bed and breakfast spot. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, well, you know, keeping it along the same lines, your favorite fuckboy, Chris Brown, made headlines this week for many reasons. One, his manager is called off the boxing match that he was supposed to have with Soulja Boy. For those of you who missed that beef, it started on January 2nd when Soulja Boy was in Karrueche's, I don't even know how to pronounce her name, so I apologize, but I don't know. When Soulja Boy was in Karrueche's DMs, or no, he just commented on one of her pictures. Chris Brown was blowing Soulja Boy up, calling him on his voicemail, asking him why he commented on one of her pictures. Soulja Boy, as we know, has not grown up at all. And is no longer the cute boy that all of us liked when he was talking about Superman. And gets really public and really ugly and really aggressive. And basically challenges Chris to a boxing match. And they were very serious about it. Like, there was some Lavender Holyfield involved. And what's the guy's name who can't read?
Floyd Mayweather.
There we go. Floyd Mayweather was involved. But Chris Brown's manager has called it off now because... according to Chris, there were just too many middlemen. Everybody was trying to get a piece of the pie. Soulja Boy got real flippant on Twitter and was talking about, oh, you a bitch ass nigga, you not ready, you pussy ass nigga, all those things that Soulja Boy says. And Chris was like, fairly calm response. He was like, don't believe any of the hype. In other news, Chris Brown has also made headlines because Karrueche had to get a restraining order. She says that he has punched her, he has threatened her life, and he continues to bother her because she's living her life and he can't handle it. And this is the same person whose residency in Las Vegas has just been renewed. There you go. Chris Brown, fuckboy number one. What do you got to say about it?
I mean, we knew this. We knew this. You know, people who are hitting, you know, who's supposed to be their like main love, as Rihanna was for him, in such a brutal and violent way. I knew that Karrueche was catching some hands. I'm just absolutely astounded that she held her silence for so long.
Well, he hit her in the stomach. So he, you know, he learned, apparently, from the first time. And apparently, when he was hitting her, this was the same time where he was still on probation for hitting Rihanna.
Mm-hmm. And she did not, you know, she didn't want to criminalize him, right? Like, right. So she didn't say anything.
Right.
And so you think that he would at least in his best interest be like, you know what, like, let me just leave her alone. She like held me down when I was doing all manner of nonsense.
Pushing her downstairs. It seems that he has learned nothing and continues down this path. My question is, though, why doesn't he just get help? He has the means to do so.
Oh, come on. That means that he would think that he needs help. He's never been convinced of that. it's so clear. He's always seen his role in this as somewhat as a victim. I mean, even when he went on, was it Larry King with his mama?
I think so, yeah.
So then he's like dragging out his childhood. Isn't that the same Milo move, right? Of like,
I don't know,
like,
if it's the same move. I do think it's important to provide context. But then you have to move past it.
You just did something absolutely horrible. You rearranged some woman's face.
Yeah.
And you were a grown, strapping man. Did you know, and Chris is a big dude. I think people forget that. He's like 6 foot something and he's not little. So this is like a formidable force, like doing this to a woman. And he did that. And then when he was coming out, instead of focusing on his actions and what he did and letting the abuse he witnessed as a kid be a side note, of course, then it turns into the Chris Brown story of like, life has been rough for me.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. You know,
I didn't watch the interview. I wasn't interested.
My mom had, because apparently his mom was abused while he was young, and he witnessed that, of course. And so now he's parroting that behavior. But there's no analysis of that, right? There's just like, look, yeah, it was wrong, but like, let's just focus on how I'm the real victim here.
Okay.
I always knew that this dude had not learned anything.
Okay. Well, he hasn't, obviously, but he is learning. While he's not learning anything about, owning his illness or whatever it is that continues to make him aggressive towards women specifically, he is owning the fact that he knows it would be a really bad move to go for it with this boxing match. He continues to learn about his career. Remember when he got robbed and he kicked out those friends because he figured it was the friends? Like, mm-hmm. Those things he's willing to learn on. But when it comes to women and then respecting them, not ready for that yet.
Nah, not at all. No, that's usually like the deathbed lesson for men.
In our second segment, so as you know, I'm an Oscars geek. And Sunday is the day that we will see what has changed at the Oscars with the 700 plus new members that were brought on board under a Black chairperson who claims that she is changing the Academy.
Okay.
But I would like to put a few things in perspective, because everyone feels like, oh my God, Oscars so Black. No, they're not. Oscars are not Black. But we do have nominees this year that we haven't had before. There was a 2017 Hollywood Diversity Report that was put out this week by the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies. And they look at a total of 11 different categories in Hollywood. So it ranges from television to streaming platforms to rate, you know, what's going on? What's the parameter? What does it look like for people of color on screen? And across all of those 11 categories, and that includes things like film writing, cable scripted leads, digital scripted leads, and so forth. Across all 11 of those categories, people of color remain underrepresented. People of color accounted... Shocking. People of color accounted for only 13.6% of film leads, increasing only 0.7% from last year. Movies whose casts are at least 10% people of color accounted for 38.5% of 2015's top 10 films, which is 4% more than 2014. But at the same time, the percentage of films with POC majority cast decreased from 8.6% to 7.1%. POCs directed 10.1% of films, which was down from 12.9%, and wrote 5.3% of them, which was also down from 8%. So these are just, you know, some indicators of how not Black Hollywood is today. But we had also the celebration this week of the American Black Film Festival Honors, which was held by BET, where people like Denzel Washington were honored with the Hollywood Legacy Award. Issa Rae was honored with the Rising Star Award. F. Gary Gray was honored with the Excellence in the Arts Award. Queen Latifah was honored with the Entertainment Icon Award. Terrence Howard, for whatever reason, was honored with Excellence in the Arts Award.
Terrence Howard, very good. Amazing.
And so people might feel like, you know, it was hosted by Regina Hall. She was super cute. People might feel like there's a lot of momentum right now. As you said, you just watched Moonlight, and that's up for 8 different awards at the Oscars. We'll see if they go home with any of them. But what does this mean, like, for Black and brown people, especially queer Black and brown people? Because when I look at this list, for example, at the ABFF, okay, well, I guess there is some representation on there, but we can't really claim them because they're not super out. But we have Moonlight, which is nominated at the Oscars. And we have, was there anything else that was incredibly Black and beautiful and excellent and queer this year? Not really. Fences is absolutely not that. Hidden Figures is also not.
The queer is,
I mean, Ava DuVernay is nominated for a directing Oscar for 13th. Well, she's nominated for the film. It's not directing. It's for the film because it's a documentary. So there's a lot of Blackness in the documentary category this year. I Am Not Your Negro is nominated. 13th is nominated. And there's a third film that I'm blanking on the name that's also nominated in the documentary category, all by Black people and people of color. Ava DuVernay is also not out.
Is she not?
I don't because think that's so.
How?
Those of us who know, know. But I don't think she's actually out.
Right.
I mean, she is besties with Oprah these days. And Oprah is like the queen of not being.
Well, I mean, I think maybe, I don't know the backstory and if or why she's not. I don't even know what it is. I just, you know, the gaydar tells me something. But I don't know, like, that's my hope or if it's the reality. It could be just my hope. It could be my hope to claim her as family. But that's what it's telling me.
Is that really just hope? Okay, we won't speculate on someone's sexuality too long.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, you know, I'm just going to say right now, it's my hope. It's my hope that she is family.
Okay.
But if she's not, I love her all the same. She's amazing.
Okay, so we're being politically correct today, I see. Okay.
Every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
Okay. That will take too long today. But we also have some great things that are happening, such as the new web series, Brown Girls and 195 Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Brown Girls, as many of you probably have already heard about, takes place in Chicago, and it covers the lives of two women, their friendship, Layla, South Asian Muslim writer, and Patricia, a Black musician. And they're both trying to, like, figure out this whole sex thing and relationships and queer, not queer, a little bit queer, always queer. And then there's 195 Lewis, which is very explicitly Black queer and poly in Brooklyn. So we have, like, these new shows that are amazing and exciting, and people feel like there's a lot of promise because of Issa Rae's success, starting on YouTube and then going over to HBO. What do you think? Where's your barometer? Because you're good at, like, you know, looking at the figure, putting it up, you know where the wind is blowing. What would you say?
I think that people really have to understand that what Issa Rae did wasn't just create great content, but she created a machine. So she had this great content, but then she had a machine of publicity. She had a machine. She was extremely responsive. She put other people on. Her networking was on fleek, as the children say. And so this was just like an all around hustler.
Yes.
Doing what she does. So that when a glimmer of hope shone for, like, people catching on to Awkward Black Girl and that going viral, she was ready. She was poised. And she had certain skills that just made everything work right. So, and this is shown in how polished, sure, there's production quality things and it was low budget, but the acting, the scene structure, the writing in Awkward Black Girl is polished. It's someone who knows what they're doing.
Yes. And she even talks about, she was very serious even about the production quality, even though it was low budget. She took it extremely seriously.
Mm-hmm. So that doesn't always happen. Sometimes you see people that have, like, kernels of a great concept and a concept that a lot of people are thirsty for, but then the execution, it's really hard to have that level of writing, that level of pacing, that level of the stuff that Issa was able to bring on her viral effort. Have you seen Brown Girls?
I haven't watched Brown Girls yet. And I know that 195 Lewis, they're trying to change things, change the distribution of it because it was received so well in Brooklyn. Have you watched it?
I saw Brown Girls.
How did you like it?
It was very entertaining, right? Like, it was wonderful, and it was wonderful to see us reflected. And it was wonderful to see someone, get in touch with what at least now seems like bisexuality. Because usually it's like there are not a lot of bisexual characters.
Right.
It's usually like either they're gay or they're straight. So I absolutely love that. But of course, you know, the bi girl messy as hell. But
yeah, she's very messy. She's very messy.
She's messy.
That's Lila. Yeah.
Yeah. It's short and they like to pack it with a lot of drama. Of
things, yeah.
So sometimes it could be a bit hard to do character development in that context, right? So I think each episode is something in the range of like around 15 minutes. So it's a pretty short episode.
Oh, well, that's actually quite long.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, normally it's about 8 minutes.
Okay. So maybe longer than most. But then why I'm saying that is because, so you've got, let's say, 12 minutes, and there are about 4 different scene changes.
Okay.
So things are happening quick. Things are happening quick.
Well, what do you think about when you think about Brown Girls, for example? So the show's creator, Fatima Askar, said specifically that she's not trying to be one voice. Right. She's not trying to be the voice for brown Muslim queer women. It's she wants to contribute to the voice, which I think is a really beautiful way of saying it. And you've said on the show that Issa has also, in your opinion, created something where she's not trying to be representative or put on one face. Right. She's allowing room for all the many faces and voices. And and then there's Moonlight, which tells a story that probably has never been told in that way, ever. In my opinion, it's a masterpiece. But you have, when I went to the Q&A with Barry Jenkins and Terrell sitting next to each other, and they were both saying it was their story, right? They are from Liberty Park. Like Barry says, when he was, you know, filming this, he's going through therapy watching Naomi Harris play his mama, basically. But what does that mean when, on the one hand, we see these really powerful stories and these stories that we haven't seen before being told by us, because who can tell it better? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, the numbers in Hollywood are saying, actually, things aren't really that different. If anything, they're slightly decreasing.
Yeah, I think there's this macro picture and then there's micro picture. There are these works of art that are coming out that people are very, very much responding to. Critics are responding to them and the box office is responding to them. And then there's the macro picture that shows us that. And even with that, there aren't more people getting opportunity. So it kind of shows you how illogical systems of oppression are. It's not like they're responding to market forces, because if they were responding to market forces, they would be like, Hidden Figures, let's have 4 more of those. How about that?
Right.
Right. That would be responding to market forces. You talking about, I beat out Star Wars? Could you imagine if any other genre of movie beat out Star Wars? We would have 5 coming next year. We would have them in the works right now. Matt Damon would be getting in on action. Anybody throwing money at movies would be throwing money at those movies right now, because it's a formula then, right? Because you never know what's going to pop in Hollywood.
Right.
And so when you have a proven thing, you usually get behind it.
Of course.
But when that comes to queer people and Black people, it doesn't necessarily hold.
Well, from a film presentation point of view, Hidden Figures checks all the boxes, other than the fact that it's 3 Black women who are leading it. Like, it is definitely presented in that way. You know, all of the beats are the beats that you know from film when it's a story being told in this way. And you leave the theater feeling energized and uplifted and inspired, right? They've done all the things. But at the end of the day, it's 3 Black women who lead, right? One is overweight. None of us are classically beautiful, according to New York Times, right?
Classically beautiful, according to the New York Times. None of them are angels.
Right. But then you have something like The Birth of a Nation, right? Birth of a Nation left Sundance breaking records, right? Sold for a higher price than any film before. And then it flops as far as awards go. Not necessarily, it didn't completely flop in the box office. That would be false. But as far as, critic acclaim after Sundance, it was a complete flop. And the white critics, as I've mentioned before, the white critics who I've heard talk about it, they don't even really care about the backstory with the rape. They just don't feel like it's a great film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important, I think, that we remember these different systems, as you said, and how they're completely illogical. Money doesn't make something great.
Mm-hmm.
And an Academy Award or even an Academy nomination doesn't make something great. I mean, at the end of the day, Moonlight might go home with nothing. It might go home with nothing after the Oscars, but it's won. Yep, SAG, it's
here in
Golden Globes. What did you say?
It would not surprise me at all after what I experienced here in Scotland.
Really?
Uh-uh. Not at all.
What is your experience?
Moonlight is a specific story. There's a specific way that they're speaking, their cultural references that they have.
Yes.
There are ways of being that you would really only understand if you have any familiarity with it. And I think, I'm in Glasgow, Scotland right now, and I went to go see Moonlight, and we were in the theater as the two only Black people, right? So possibly the two only Americans, I'm not sure. But what we heard around us during the movie and definitely after the movie was, what's that? What are they saying? They didn't laugh at jokes. They didn't get any references.
Really?
One person behind us said, I didn't know it would be so inarticulate. This isn't what I was.
Whoa, stop
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I didn't know they would be so inarticulate, is what he said.
Oh my God.
So there definitely was the sense of, you know, the Negroes, you know, they're used to seeing. No, seriously, like, you know, they either want to see some like monumental acting, Shakespearean level, move me to the most emotional place, or they want to see, you know, portraits of Black excellence, like in Hidden Figures. But a subtle story and a specific story,
yes,
and a story that breaks all kinds of stereotypes around queerness, masculinity, Blackness. They just could not process it. They just could not process it.
In London, it was a little different because there the two times that I went to see it, the audience was quite diverse.
Mm-hmm.
But a friend of mine, someone I work with, a white man who's bisexual, mm-hmm, went to see the film. And I asked, well, how did you enjoy it afterwards? And I was appalled by the answer.
No.
Appalled.
What did he say?
He said quite a few things, but the things that stuck out for me most was he thinks that they really missed an opportunity to get some hot gay sex going on screen.
Wow. And this brings me to another web series that we didn't mention called The Other Boys.
I was getting there. I was getting my segue.
That was my segue.
But you picked up on it. That's fine. So you got it. But I just wanted to say to close out what was important to me about that. One, did you miss the whole point of the movie? Anyway, mm-hmm, that's okay. Like, I understand the perspective of wanting to see authentic gay sex on screen, right? Because women talk about this as well. After blue is the warmest color, you know, with this 10-minute male gaze sex scene between two women. I get that. But that's not Moonlight. There was no missed opportunity because that's not the story that's being told.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt seriously that any Black or brown gay man, or even maybe not even gay person, Black or brown person, would have that critique for this film specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, as you've already brought up, things like Other Boys NYC are so important. It's a new documentary series that highlights the lives and identities of 50 gay and trans men of color living in New York City. And the first 26 episodes were released this week on the LGBTQ-focused media platform Slay TV. I haven't watched it yet, but I do plan on getting to it this weekend. Have you watched any of it?
Yes, I have seen some of them. I've seen a good amount of them, probably most of them.
And?
They're short, you know.
Yeah, they're very short.
Yeah, so I just kind of kept it on in the background. It's amazing. It's stories that, of course, we all know, but for your person, they would never know. I feel like it should be like required viewing for every white gay boy. And
what would that change?
Queer women all need an equivalent of it. Not necessarily. I'm sort of an Afro-pessimist in the sense that I don't think that more knowledge equals more wokeness.
Yeah, we've really seen that.
Yeah. So in that sense, maybe not. But I definitely think that there is a base level of ignorance that occurs, and a dehumanization and a fetishization of Black queer men in the scene, and men of color in general in the scene, that is just, it needs to be spoken to. It's happening in 2016. It definitely needed, it was time for this to happen. So many of these men of color are talking about their experience being fetishized by white men, being cast aside and not seen as beautiful by white men. There was one brother that even talks about how white supremacy is so pervasive in the gay scene that there are other Black men that won't date him because he's Black. Yeah. They will only white men.
Oh yeah, there have been people who've written blogs about that.
And it definitely is something that we, you know, queer people have always known this, but it's queer people of color, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it definitely is something that needed to be spoken on.
And in our final segment, what are you excited about? Denise, what are you looking forward to?
Mm-hmm. What am I looking forward to? Well, I just found out that Big Frida is going to be at Afropunk Paris. So that has solidified the fact that I am going to Afropunk Paris. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about joining the fight for transgender bathroom rights, because for those of you who don't know, there was an executive order that came down that basically overturned the Obama rules on bathroom non-discrimination for trans students. And I'm just interested in seeing the first court case.
Well, they basically rescinded what the Obama administration
They rescinded it. But yeah, I don't think that that's going to hold water in the courts. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that make its way through the courts. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Oscars. I still have a few movies to watch this weekend before the Oscars on Sunday. It's something that I do stay up for and live tweet and live text. And I'm looking forward to this weekend. There's a lot going on here in London. It's the last weekend of LGBT History Month, so I'll be checking out a few events with the V&A Late Museum has a program going on that should be very interesting. Tonight I'm going to watch some short films, and it's under the title Masculinity Like This. I've even created a little meetup group for it. Try to do the last little bit that I can for LGBT month, because I feel like I didn't do anything for it. And then I will either cry or rejoice on Sunday, depending on who wins what Oscars. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.